Welcome back, everyone, to the Reflex Blue Show. We are still in the Heinz Convention Center here in lovely Boston, Massachusetts, and we have with us from Atlanta, correct? Sam Harrison?
That is correct, Donovan.
Now, Sam, we've been trying to line you up to be on the show for a couple years, and you, when you come to the conference, I mean, you know, a lot of times you fly in, you fly out, and you're booked.
Actually, you just don't pay enough, Donovan. That's the real reason. I've been ducking you every year, waiting for a bigger payout.
The truth is, we not only don't pay enough, we pay negative. So we'll send you the bill later.
Okay.
So it's actually how I make all.
Gosh, money. Look at the time.
Yeah. No, what are you speaking at this year at the Howe Conference?
I gave two talks. Yesterday, I spoke about zooming into your creative zing zone, which, as I explained to the attendees, I see that we are always existing in one of three zones. We're in the zigzag zone, which is sort of this frantic state, pinball machine, anxiety state that we can get ourselves into when we're filled with worry and anxiety about daily life, which just totally paralyzes us. And then there's the zombie zone, which is the other extreme of that, where we get into a comfort zone or a velvet rut based on a lot of times success. And then the third and more appealing one is what I call the zing zone, which is that zone where our creativity is reaching its full potential and where we're firing on all cylinders. So that was the topic yesterday. And then today I talked about selling ideas, how we can better sell and present our ideas to decision makers, clients, peers, team members, whomever.
What's the hardest idea you've ever had to sell? Is there one where maybe it went well, but when, or even when you thought about it, you're like, I don't know how I'm going to sell this. Was there ever one of those that came to you? Or?
Yes, how I was going to get you to pay me for this interview.
Oh, well, we'll keep working on that. Maybe you get in the zing-zong zone or whatever, and maybe we'll talk about it.
Good question. I spent several years ago, 2 or 3 years, trying to convince the NFL to do some promotional and licensing work with an organization I was with at the time. And that was a long sell, and I had to go through a lot of decision makers along the way. And
I bet they got a law team like nobody to deal with.
They do. They have a pretty large team, but they have a great marketing team. And I was a small player. One of the things that made it difficult is they're used to the Cokes and the Deltas and the Nikes of the world, and we were coming in with a much smaller program, but one that we thought was energetic and appealing. So we did get it sold, and not only did we eventually sell the NFL, we got Major League Baseball and National Hockey League. And
who was it for? You can plug them.
This was for it's no longer in existence. Then it was financial related products, credit cards, other products, and also a lot of leather goods and personal items. So, but it was very successful.
So what is the advice you're going to give people on how to help sell these ideas that we have?
Well, I talked about two or three things. One is connecting with your decision maker, really getting to know your decision maker, not just as they are in the office, but also what they do outside, and getting to know their hopes and dreams, and most of all, why your idea is important to them. So connecting with them, and then clarifying your message that you are given, that making sure it's clear and meets them where they are, and then the final thing is cultivating a relationship before, during, and after your presentation.
Yeah, because a lot of times you may not sell that first job, but that doesn't mean they won't come back to you. So is that part of the relationship thing? Because you can always come back and try selling something different.
There you go. Yeah, exactly right. Building credibility, building a track record with that person. And so even if you don't make the sale, at least you've hopefully begun to build some credibility. And so it was good. I don't know if you heard Seth and Debbie's a couple of days ago, but Seth talked a lot about learning to being able to say no to clients that aren't allowing you to do what you feel like you need to do creatively. And that's good advice, and I've certainly had the opportunity to say no to some clients sometime. But a better path is being able to convince your client to say yes to your ideas. And so that's where I was trying to help people head today.
No, and I think they're both great advice, because you have some of the best jobs we've done are the ones we didn't have to do, because it wouldn't have worked out well or something.
Absolutely.
And or they're the ones where you're able to sell to the client on a better idea than they actually wanted.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I agree. And so that's what. So I gave a lot of tips and techniques, just basic selling techniques. A lot of it's common sense, but it's the trick is making it common practice to actually use it.
And a lot of this common sense, though, too, is that you get kind of stuck in a certain way. I know people do. Something's worked for them or worked well enough, and you get tunnel vision. Maybe you know the selling part isn't your focus, so you just kind of let it go by. And sometimes things that may seem common sense to you aren't, like, until they're actually heard, and people are like, "Oh, yes, you are correct, Sam."
I hope so. And it's turning common sense into common practice, like you're saying. I mean, we may have the common sense, but we're not putting it into practice. So
right. I tell you what, the hardest one for me to put into practice, and I'm sure for a lot of people, is that one where you say no to a job. And it's common sense to do it, but that one's hard.
Yeah. Sure, it'd be nice to eat next week. Yeah, it's hard, but sometimes it's worth it walking away.
All right, well, we'll be right back. Sam, you know, I've never actually been to Atlanta. How is it there? Other than hot, I hear it's hot.
It is hot. It is hot there. It's getting ready to be really hot. Fortunately, we have a little cottage up in North Carolina that we escape to as often as possible. So it's about 20 degrees cooler. I can leave Atlanta at 99 degrees, and it's 75 there, so that's nice. But it's good. I live. We moved out of Atlanta, south of the airport, to a new community called Serenby, which is it's a coin word for be serene.
Sure.
It is. They call it rural urbanism because it's a farm and it's out in. Secluded kind of area, but it has restaurants and it has shops and it has housing. And it's got an art center and
I like that a lot of the newer developments, some of them are doing that, because the thing that in Omaha anyway is the people I know that live way out west in new developments, it takes them a while to go to anything that's not a chain restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is the opposite of what's happened so much in Atlanta with all the sprawl and all the chains and everything. This is all local, so it feels like a small town. It's attracted a lot of art people, art creative people, and so we have a playhouse there. And we have artists in residence that come in.
Oh, wow.
From all over. So I've gotten very involved with the Serenby Institute, which is the art. Portion of it, and it's pretty credible.
So do they have like is it a lot of public art as well, or is it all like?
Yeah, we have installations down there. We have people come in and do different photography and painting. We've got a Asian woman who's in right now. We had the other day Seth mentioned Sarah Kay, who is a poet. I don't know if you heard that interview, but he was talking about Sarah Kay is the only poet who's making a living as a poet.
Because more people I heard write poetry than read it.
Here's her trick. She performs it.
Oh.
She calls herself a spoken word poet. And she was, if you go to TED Talks, she spoke at TED 2 years ago when she was 23 years old. She got 2 standing ovations, which is unheard of.
Wow.
She's delightful. And she came and did an artist in resident program with us last summer.
So she did just spoken word poetry then?
She did spoken word poetry. While she was there, she wrote some poems for herself. When the artists come in like that, they have no strings attached. They don't have to do anything other than work on what they want to work on. If they want to give a performance, they can, but they don't have to. But it's really just giving them a chance to be creative, get inspired, and interact with the people in the community.
And when you let creative people be creative, it I assume it helps draw in bigger names that they wouldn't have necessarily got otherwise.
Yeah, and not just that. I mean, it's that contagious thing. It makes us all more creative down there. I mean, we get re-inspired. The residents do. So is it
starting to take off like more than in your community? Is it starting to branch in all of Atlanta, or how long have they been doing this stuff?
Well, this is only the community has only been established 5 or 6 years. We were one of the pioneers. We got in there about 6 years ago, but it's really only started growing in the last 2 or 3 years. And so there's some overlap with Atlanta. We do some interchange programs, but we're pretty much self-contained. But it's a great thing. And what else have I been? I'm connected with this group. I talked about it a bit yesterday in my talk called Youth Villages, which is a organization. It's a living facility, treatment facility, educational facility for really troubled kids. These are kids that have been abused and abandoned and in and out of all kind of foster homes. And I'm at the early stages of getting more involved with them, but I'm really fascinated, particularly with one thing that they do. They have a cognitive behavior program. I talked about this a little bit yesterday. They have a cognitive behavior program, and what they've done, these kids have had so much trauma that their world gets really small. It's all they can concentrate on is the trauma that's been in their lives. So consequently, they can't learn. They don't embrace their topics, their subjects in school. They don't have social skills.
Yeah, it's hard. That's going to be difficult.
No, it's hard. But what they've done with this cognitive behavior program that fascinates me is they got them involved in arts. They have this drum program that's incredible. These kids learn how to do drumming, this African drumming techniques. They have other programs. They have painting and theater, songs. And what they've found is those kids get involved in any one of those programs, suddenly their world starts to expand and they get more confidence and they suddenly have interest in math or whatever other topics they're interested in.
Well, I think most of our audience can really relate because most of us designers got into what we do because of some sort of art program. I mean, originally, and that's what drove most of the people I know that are in this.
That's a good point, yeah. And and most of us probably had cognitive behavior problems too. Now but hopefully not the trauma that some of these kids have had. But yeah. No, I think it was an outlet to us.
Yeah.
That's the point.
I was just saying I think we can relate to what creativity can do.
Exactly.
For your life and for other people's lives.
And so that shows how important creativity is and how meaningful and magical it can be. It can make a difference. So what we do and what others do with their creativity.
How big is the program? Where do people go to find out more information about it?
Youth Villages is actually larger than Atlanta. The one in Atlanta is called Inner Harbor, but it's part of a chain. I'm not sure how many states they're in, but you can go to youthvillages.com. I'm sure that's their website, and you can find more about them and what they do.
That's a wonderful thing.
I think it's one. So I'm really hoping to get more connected with them during the summer. So those are some of the main things. Still going around a lot, speaking.
Okay, we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about that.
You just got up.
Yeah, well, I had to get up and do some stretches. Well, what happened was, so I saw you. Did you do the opening keynote in Boston 2 years ago? Was that the one? Okay.
Yeah.
So if I remember right, at the end you had a full dance troupe like come on and just go mad after you spoke, right?
Yeah, I had drummers too. Matter of fact, remember I had this.
So I figured I better start warming up because I assume that after you're done with this, I have to like do performance art or something.
Yeah, Donovan just got up and danced around the room, just a solo performance for me. So
yeah, to get you back in your, I want to get you back in your stage mentality. So the next, I think the other thing I probably have to do is you had everybody in the thing, you know, thousands of designers rip up sheets of paper and throw them.
Yeah,
and they wrote on them. But I also heard that you may not have told Howe about that ahead of time, that you'd have like 10,000 sheets of paper all over the ground.
My mistake.
I think they're still sweeping it up after 2 years.
I think 2 years later, I saw a few pieces there on the floor this year. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. I don't know if I alerted them or not. Nino was kind enough to donate that colorful paper.
Oh, and it was wonderful too because it was like yellow, pink, blue paper just everywhere. It was like confetti. Yeah. People were throwing it from the balcony.
Yeah. We have some wonderful photos of that. The exercise was that you had to write down something that you was keeping you from being creative. What was your excuse? Something you wanted to do, but you weren't doing it. So you had to write it down on a piece of the paper that Nina had provided. And then I had everyone tear those up and toss them in the air at the same time, and there goes your excuse.
You guys can do this while you're listening here, but the difference is there won't be a convention staff to sweep it up.
That's right, clean up
your own desk. But
yeah, you might want to do it over a trash can.
But it is it is kind of a release, and it was kind of fun.
Yeah,
I think everyone seemed to enjoy that.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd never done it for I don't think a group that large. I had smaller groups do it, 50, 75, but. We had a confetti gun going on there. Yeah, it was fun.
So where do people go? Now, and by the way, you're wonderful on stage. I mean, there's a reason they brought you in to do the opening keynote a couple of years ago and that they brought you back here. But you do a lot of other speaking. Where do people go to find out, like, where you're going to go or if they're interested in booking you in a group, where do people find out information about?
Zingzone.com. Z-I-N-G-Z-O-N-E. .com. Okay. That's my website.
Zingzone.com.
Yeah. And there's you can find out more about my talks and my books and links to articles I've written. Yeah.
What's your personal favorite talk you've given?
Oh, golly, the last ones. I don't know. I love the creative ones, but I also do love talking about how to present your ideas. You know, for years I just talked about finding inspiration, being more creative, and I still love doing that and still do a lot of it. But I had people coming up afterwards and said, "That's great, and you really inspired me, and I'm having more ideas, but now I can't get them approved by my decision maker." So I wrote, you know, I had a book out, I had a book called Zing and then one called Idea Spotting, which is about how to spot insights and ideas. So I wrote Idea Selling, which is selling techniques. And I probably speak as much about that as I do about the creative side now. It's
now,
good balance.
To find your books, do people just go onto the Zing Zone or do they, or
yeah,
Amazon?
Or Amazon, either way.
Okay.
Yeah. Books, your local bookstore, if there's any left.
You know, there's a local bookstore in this mall here that Paul Stanley is signing his book on Sunday, and I'm leaving early. So I even brought my Kiss shirt.
Really?
So it was destined for me to, I guess, stay a couple days and get my... Paul Stanley book or something.
Wow. And there's a local bookstore.
There's the Barnes & Noble down. I mean, it's just down the mall here in the same building.
Well, Barnes & Noble is not local. That's a chain.
Well, I mean, but they got Paul Stanley coming.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes up for this. Yeah.
This mall is gigantic. There's probably 18 bookstores in here.
Is it really?
No.
Yeah.
But the mall is big enough that it could hold them. So.
Yeah. There's not many local bookstores anymore. I just signed books in the Howe bookstore. That was fun. But you're always signing books is an interesting thing. You always look forward to it, but you always hope there are people there a line waiting. You know, it's sad when you just sit there.
Have you ever had that where just nobody's there or? Places do a good job of promoting it?
Most places do a pretty good job, but one time I was speaking at, and I don't know how I got booked for this gig, but I was speaking at governmental public affairs officers, and I guess we were in D.C., and somebody had heard me speak at another conference, and they had me come speak, and they were not my audience. They did not get into a lot of the exercises I wanted to do, and so it was kind of sad. But they had a book signing and afterwards, and not a lot of people showed up for that signing. I don't think they were into being more creative, but that's the exception. I've had good luck. I love David Sedaris. You know Sedaris.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
He has a great story about doing a book signing at a Kmart somewhere in some Midwestern town.
Probably Omaha, where I'm from. Probably
yeah. Yeah. And he, not his talking about not your audience. I mean, this was not his audience, and so nobody showed up for his sign. He said, just watch people go by. And to make it worse, he had his publicist for all of his book signings and put up a sign because people had gotten so bad about taking photos that it took up too much time. So they were
You get it too long of a line. You need to get it moved because no one
wants
to stand
that. Everybody wants to post photos. So he had to, out of necessity, because he usually has huge lines, he had it for all of his things. He would have a sign up that said no photos. So here he was in some small town at a Kmart with nobody waiting in line with this big stack of books, and him sitting behind a table with a sign that says no photos. And he said people would go by and look at him and say, with an expression that said, as if. So I haven't had that dismal experience yet.
Well, Howe does a good job. They got a pretty good bookstore here, and they do a good job of making sure everyone knows who's coming through and getting the right people to sign.
Yeah, and you know, this, I speak at a lot of conferences and all over certainly the U.S., sometimes beyond. And Howe is my favorite. I mean, it always has been. The energy here is just so great. I mean, as a speaker. Particularly, right. I mean, you can ask the audience to do just about anything, and they're so enthusiastic, they'll jump right in and do it, and they're very responsive.
Yeah, they'll rip up paper, they'll throw it.
They'll do it. I think you could say, go jump out that back window there, and they'll line up and go for it just to see what they experience. No, they're wonderful. They really are. It's such a great energy. And
what's your favorite city to speak in? Is there one where...
I don't know. I don't have one. Well, I've spoken, I think, in all of them, and I don't know that I have some of my favorite cities just in the U.S. are New York and New Orleans and San Francisco are probably top of the list. But
there's a lot of
Seattle.
People and a lot of culture in all of those.
Yeah,
I totally get that.
Yeah.
When nothing's better than like visiting San Francisco. It's just fun.
I love Boston. I mean, there's few cities that I don't enjoy. I love traveling. I like getting out and meeting people and seeing what's around the corner. I mean, it's always something new.
Yeah. Well, Sam, we really want to thank you for your time. And to find out more information, it's zingzone.com.
Yep. Zingzone.com.
And you'll probably be coming through your town to speak. Go see him. He's good.
Thank you. Please do. Thanks a lot.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Meary is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.